Welcome to Step Into Magic, your weekly online radio show on how to develop your psychic ability, deepen your spirituality, and find your own true purpose, presented by acclaimed medical intuitive, Josephine Lang. This broadcast is a part of the Wisdom and Intuition Network at metaphysicalwisdom.com. This is Anthony Taylor, your host, and on behalf of Josephine, I'll be taking your calls and questions. This week's topic is guided imagery meditations, engaging the power of our imagination. For those of you who are new to our show, Josephine has been a clairvoyant healer for more than 25 years. During that time, she's helped thousands of people from around the world to heal from hard-to-diagnose and chronic health issues. She has also been a teacher and spiritual mentor for hundreds of people who treasure her insights, courage, and love.
Hello, everyone. I can't tell you how happy it always makes me to do our radio show together, to know that you're out there listening, and it's just such a joy to connect in this way. So thank you so much for tuning in. Today we're going to cover the topic of guided imagery meditation, and this is perhaps my favorite type of meditation, and I was first exposed to it by that wonderful master, Louise Hay, and I was healing from a back injury, and she helped me to understand that we can move to forgiveness. We can, and I would listen to her tapes as I would fall asleep at night, and they would help me with managing the pain to have something to listen to. And I'll share more about all of that in just a few minutes, but first I always like to begin our show with a spiritual agreement. And this was a gift to me from my friend and dear mentor, Jana Massey. It goes like this, and I ask you all to join in this agreement with me, if you will. Together we acknowledge that everything that we think, that we say, and that we do at this time will be of the highest good. And together we ask for truth, the understanding of that truth, and the wisdom to use it in our lives. Can you all agree?
I do.
Thank you, Tony, and thank you, everyone.
Josephine, before you go on, we received some lovely messages from our listeners, and the first is from a listener in California, and she writes, God bless you, Josephine, for stepping up to the plate to do it for us all. Not only does it help us all change our life, but you are making us stop and think of the reason why we are here on earth. Wow. Think about that. That is huge. You are helping souls.
Oh my gosh, that's beautiful. So sweet. Right back at you.
And we have another message from a listener in Portland, Oregon, who says, thank you for saving the recordings of your shows. It's been a lovely, grounding wind down to listen to them at the end of the day. Love from Kathy.
Aww.
And we also received a supportive comment about our weekly newsletter.
How nice.
It goes like this. So pleased each time I receive your email and see the wonderful work you are doing. My wish for you is that you experience joy tenfold of that which you inspire in and for others.
Oh, isn't that beautiful?
Yes.
Well, let's see. Why don't we go ahead and move right to that first slide then, Tony? And this is a quote by Louise Hay, and it's a little more about what I was starting to talk about before we had our spiritual agreement. And that injury was pretty severe, and I had to spend a year in bed, and I had quite a lot of pain, and, you know, there were lots of horrible choices that I was being given about body casts and things like that. Nothing sounded good. And I had a lot of mental angst and also a lot of, you know, holding in my mind and in my emotions about why this happened to me and how could that, it was a result of a horse accident, and, you know, what was this all about? And when I would try to sleep in bed, I found that I was able to sleep much more easily if I would put on a little tape player, and I had little, you know, earbuds, and I'd put those in and listen to these soothing words by Louise Hay about forgiveness, and I found it to be very calming, and then I could sleep. And perhaps some of you have had some experiences that are similar like that. I hope you haven't had bad injuries or anything, but sometimes listening to tapes at night about guided imagery can really help us to get some good sleep if we are troubled in our minds, as I was at that time. And her tape, what she mostly said, or in this one tape that I like to listen to a lot, was to imagine your parents or anybody that you have any problems with that you need to forgive and to see them as small children and to understand that they too were little people at one point, and they probably had some tough stuff that happened to them when they were young. And it just sort of helps to raise the understanding about who they are and why they do what they do as adults. And then to just see them as little small children and then give those children a hug and then pick them up and place them right in your heart. And that was such a nice guided image that it really helped me to calm myself and to get some good sleep. And then as well, at that time, I came across another wonderful book, and this was by Shakti Gawain, Creative Visualization. And her book is just a beautiful book. In the foreword, they mention that one of her admirers had written in how each of her meditations was like being taken gently by the hand into a beautiful garden full of flowers, and each of the meditations was like being given a flower. And that's very much what it is like. If you haven't read that book, I highly recommend it. And in it, she has all kinds of lovely exercises, and there's a number that I have adopted in my life. And I'd like to just start off our program tonight with one of those exercises that comes from her book. And we can do this together with either a closed eyes or open eyes. I'll often do it with open eyes, but for the first time, if it's new to you, you might want to try it with closed eyes. And of course, as with all of our meditative exercises, if you are operating machinery like driving a car or something, you're going to want to save this for later. But if you're in a place where you can just settle in and get comfortable, then I invite you to do so. And just relax a little bit and take a couple of easy breaths. And this exercise is called the pink bubble technique. And it's a way that we can help ourselves to release troubling thoughts. And so if you'll just close your eyes or open if you like and just imagine a beautiful pink bubble appearing in your mind's eye somewhere right near you, and just let that bubble get to a nice size so that it can hold any troubling thoughts that you might have. And then just think of those thoughts, and then just one by one place them inside the bubble. And just put however many you need to put in there. It might be thoughts about relationships or finances or purpose or difficulties that you might have in one area of your life or another. And then just see that bubble. Just sort of shut the door on the bubble if there is one, and just see that little bubble sort of start to float away. And let it float up into the sky and then over the horizon. Maybe there's a mountain in your view and you can just see it float right on over the mountain and just let it go. And know that it's going to go to whatever place it needs to go in the universe for its highest transformation. And then it's gone. And then take a couple of relaxed and easy breaths and just allow yourself to come back to your normal waking consciousness. You might want to stretch a little bit. Open your eyes if you've had them closed. And then move your body a little. And take a few normal breaths. And come fully back to your normal waking consciousness. So that's a nice, very simple little guided imagery meditation that we can do. And it's just using our imagination to imagine something. And let it calm us, and let it bring us feelings of soothing equanimity. And there are a number of these. There's another one that I like a lot, which is either placing an imaginary gold bar over your head, or some people will see it as a gold halo. I like the halo myself. And you just allow all of your own thoughts to just come back to you through that halo. And that halo acts as like a little screen, and nobody else's thoughts can make it on through. It's just your own thoughts come in, and your own thoughts go out. It's a nice little way to kind of clear our space around us. And then another one that I think is a beautiful image that I use quite a lot is to imagine a golden star right inside of your heart. And know that this is the star of love. And just let that golden star send its energy out in all directions, all at once. And that, I think, is such a beautiful one. I really enjoy the feeling of that one in my own body. Another guided imagery idea that I've enjoyed and used is of Saint Germain and her violet flame. And so this is one of the saints, and she sits there tending a violet flame. And if ever there's anything that feels a little uncomfortable energetically in my space, I'll just hand it over to Saint Germain and let her take care of it. She places it in the violet flame. The violet is the color of our evolvement, and just lets it just evolve and just be transformed. And I'm so grateful to her for that. And as well, I really like the blue light of Regenesis. And this is one that I learned from a dear, dear friend who used to live here in California, and she since has moved to the East Coast. But she was a Regenesis practitioner. And in that particular form of body healing, that particular modality, the practitioner sees every cell of the person that they are treating as being filled with a beautiful blue light. And so I've kind of adopted that into my own meditation that I do on a daily basis, and I just allow myself to see that blue light as being the blue light of my higher self. And I just let it flood and fill my whole body, one cell at a time, which happens actually very quickly. And they're all filled up with blue light. And it's a wonderful way for us to just sort of clear and bring our intention into allowing our higher self to fill our space, to fill our body space. Then there's also another blue light meditation that you hear quite a lot of. It's the blue light of the higher self or our protection. And some people will, if they have a concern, like let's say suddenly they find themselves in a situation where they don't feel all that safe or comfortable, they'll just imagine a blue light all the way around them. And Ram Dass tells a really fun and funny story that I just love dearly, which is that he was driving this old classic car across the United States. He was taking the slow trip, and he was meditating and singing to Krishna on his drive, and he was imagining the blue light of Krishna all around him, and it's just imbued with this wonderful love energy as he's driving along. And it was, you know, in the evening time, or I think it was night, and all of a sudden he sees these blue lights all around him, real blue lights. He's like, whoa, what's that? And it turned out it was the highway patrol had come up behind him and pulled him over. So he pulled over. He thought, oh, wow, what's going on? You know, and highway patrolman, young guy, comes up to the window and says, yeah, I had to pull you over. You're going a little too slow. He's like, oh, yeah, well, you know, that's all right. And they got to talking about the classic old car, and pretty soon they were just chatting away about, you know, I think Ram Dass even got out of the car, and they were visiting away, having a lovely time visiting. And then it was, you know, time to go. I mean, he didn't get a ticket or anything because it wasn't that bad. The highway patrolman just said, you know, you might want to pay attention, you know, don't go too slow on the highway. And okay, that's fine. But they found that they just didn't want to go because they were having such a nice time talking. But, you know, how often does that happen where you just wind up having a nice chat with a highway patrolman? And so they were kind of kicking the tires, and pretty soon they was like, okay, well, now I got to go. So he gets back on the highway, and as he looked in his side view mirror to pull out onto the road, the highway patrolman waved to him goodbye. And he thought, you know, who waves? He thought that had to be Krishna himself. And I thought that was pretty sweet. Nice story.
Yeah, that's a wonderful story.
Yeah.
I'm so glad that you reminded me about Ram Dass. So he was kind of like a figure in my youth, because my friend Tim Freak, was very close to Ram Dass. In fact, he was the, I think he gave a blessing at his first wedding.
Really?
And, so I used to listen to the tapes back then, and he kind of like, he disappeared, and now you've really brought him back to me, and I'm so grateful.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I just love his teachings. He's just so full of love. And one time I remember him describing himself as a kind of a Christian Buddhist Hindu. Because he has also made a study of all these different spiritual traditions and really embraced them all. And coming from a good Jewish family, you know, who went to Hinduism and then to Buddhism, and also loves the idea of dancing with the Christ, you know. So he just embraces it all with so much love, and it's just really a beautiful, beautiful thing. He brings such a lot of wisdom to his gifts that he offers us all.
And I particularly like the quote that you often give us, which relates so much to the Louise Hay quote that we started with about putting your seeing your parents as young children and putting them in your heart.
Yeah.
And the Ram Dass quote you often use about do what you must do to another person, but never take them out of your heart.
Yes, isn't that beautiful?
I
love it.
Yeah.
Do what you must do with another person, but never take them out of your heart. Yeah, it's lovely, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, great. So it's interesting to me how much of an effect our thoughts have on the creation of our lives. There was a time after that big injury there that I was describing earlier where I had pretty severe post-traumatic stress disorder. Actually, I think it was a different injury, but never mind. And the end result was that I just couldn't imagine myself doing anything without having an injury. It was my subconscious mind, dutifully, my beloved subconscious mind, trying to protect me, letting me know that there were dangers out there and to be careful and aware of them. But it got to the point where our thoughts are very creative, and so we want to watch our thoughts and pay attention to what our thoughts are so that we are guiding our lives more from our hearts with our heartfelt intention rather than with the mental concerns that arise. And so I found that I had to actually sit down and practice imagining myself doing something as simple as walking from the living room out to the car to get a sweatshirt and to walk back into the house again. And sometimes I can remember at least one time where it took me at least a half an hour of rehearsing in my mind being able to do that very simple thing without, twisting my ankle on the front porch mat or tripping on the step and falling down and hitting my head on the brick walkway or any number of other little injuries. And, the world is fraught with danger, but really we don't have to focus so much on it. And so it took me a while to overcome that, but with some guidance from a very dear friend now who was my counselor at the time, I was able to actually successfully imagine myself going through that process in good order without any injury. And, we kind of have to, it's like with any invention that us humans make, we have to think of it first. And so in order for me to be able to conduct my life in a good way, I had to think of it first. I had to be able to think of myself being able to make it through without injury. And, a lot of athletes will do this. They will walk the course before they go out and do their golfing or whatever it might be that they are doing. Race car drivers, we have a friend whose son is now mature and he has a wonderful job working for the camera company called GoPro, and they put these little cameras on their helmets and then they go out and do these feats of derring do, and you get to see what it's like to, hang glide off of a cliff or something from the view of the person who's experiencing it. They're wonderful little cameras. And he showed us a video a few months back of a race car driver. And not only did they show the car doing the race, but they also showed the driver, who was a beautiful Japanese man, sitting there immaculate in his lovely, driving suit, his white suit. And he had his eyes closed, and he was in meditation. He was just sitting on a chair, and the young friend of ours just happened to catch this on the film that he was making the video. And he was practicing, and you could see him holding his hands like on a steering wheel, like on a little tiny race car steering wheel, and he was turning it just a little bit to the right and then turning it just a little bit to the left and then turning. And he was doing this very unusual ride up a mountainside, and they would close the mountain road for this particular race. And it was a race against time, not against other drivers. And so he knew the whole road exactly, and you could see him, as he was doing the bigger turns and the littler turns and accelerating, and his feet were going, and he was imagining the entire racetrack, the entire roadway. And then, of course, he did this record-breaking time, It was just wonderful to see the process of how his imagination helped him to do that. And the same thing happens with swimmers. I can remember Mark Spitz, I think, who was the Olympic swimmer, who said that when he was practicing his laps, he did this during his lap swimming, is he would get to the end of a lap and he would imagine a beautiful woman there. And so he would swim to the arms of this beautiful woman and then swim the other direction to the arms of another beautiful woman. I thought that was such a great imagery. You got to do something with your mind while you're swimming hundreds of miles. And that actually reminds me of a little joke I'd love to tell. This is one of my favorites. It's about Sven and Lena. And Lena is going out for the 100-mile breaststroke competition in the local community swim meet. And she gets in, and she's really trying hard to do her very best, but she finds that she just comes in dead last. And afterwards, she goes up to the judges, and she says, "You know, I don't mean to complain, but I think those other girls were using their arms."
Oh, Josephine.
I know. Sorry. It was bad. But anyway, we have to start with imagery. We want to have good self-talk and good inner imagery. And sometimes we have to love ourselves enough to imagine the lives that we'd love to have. And, you know, sometimes people will fantasize a life, but they don't take the actions that are necessary to really create that life. And so this gets us back to that basic self-love and self-trust to be able to believe that whatever life we'd like to create would be possible. So self-love is the way that we manifest a state of being. And, you know, we can ask our spirit guides to help us. And I often imagine my spirit guides scrambling around to try to, you know, reorder and reorganize and help me with my life despite the sometimes poor free will choices that I might make in my life. And so our angels are flying around trying to help and doing what they can. And another thing about this is that we think that we have to do it in order to be it, but really it's the other way around. We have to be it, and then we find the doing just flows out of that naturally, and then doors will open for us. And since you are already that which you aspire to be, you recognize and then grab those opportunities. You go through those doors because they are aligned with who you are. And it's interesting because sometimes the wrapping on the package of that is not what we might expect. So, like, for example, I've wanted to be a public speaker. You know, I've taught classes, and I thought, gosh, I'd like to take this a little further, you know, and approach a little wider audience. And so I just asked the universe, can I have a little wider audience? And within a very short time, Cindy Silva with Metaphysical Wisdom and the Wisdom and Intuition Network calls and says, "Oh, would you like to do a monthly show?" And I'm like, "Yeah, well, yeah, sure, I'd love to do that." And then, interestingly enough, I found myself after we had it all set up for the monthly show, I thought, gosh, you know, weekly might be nice. And then I sent out a card. I don't know if you remember this, Tony, but I had a little promotional card that I did to 200 women who were coming to a women's healing conference where I had been invited to be a presenter.
Oh, yes, I remember. That was up in the Bay Area.
Yes, yes, and I made a little typo on there. I said that the show was weekly when it was still monthly. This was like when we first started. And then I thought, well, there you go. It says weekly. So then I thought, and one other part of this is we have to ask for what we want. So then I talked to Cindy, and I said, what do you think? Would it be all right if I did weekly? She was like, sure, if you want to do weekly, that's great. So there you go.
That is fantastic. So there's many steps here, aren't there? And I think that sometimes, I mean, certainly for myself, I think I'm falling down on one of them. The first is like, you know, imagining it. And I guess to imagine something, you know, that you really want, it really does come back to how much do you love yourself.
It does.
If you could dare to dream, to ask for what you really wanted rather than just a little portion of what you might want.
Right.
And then just imagine, that's not enough. It seems like there's another step, which is to actually be the thing that you're imagining.
Yes, to own it, to really embrace it.
And what would be some strategies for doing that then?
Well, that imagining is a big part of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you just see yourself doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you feel what that feels like.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels good. It feels right. And then you speak to the universe and you say, you know, dear God, or angels or spirit guides, or great spirit, or Allah, or whomever it is that you're called to. You just say, I, you know, or just divine spirit of my higher self. I ask now for that which will, you know, allow me to be who I truly feel from my soul. I am meant to be the grandest, you know, idea of myself. This is what I have come here to do. Let me do it. Open the door. Create the path. Put it before me. I'll take it. I sign up. I am that. I can own it.
Wow, this is very powerful.
It is powerful, isn't it? Mm-hmm. It is the magic recipe. It's like the secret to life. It's like how we embody the divine, which I think is the meaning of life. I think that the meaning of life is for us to really embody the divine. Our portion, our little rainbow drop of water of the ocean of life, of the ocean of divinity. So we have to be who we already are. And we already are that. So then we just align with that. And then the package, you know, like for instance, I would have never dreamed of radio. I would have never, but I put it out there. Look, universe, I love teaching. I'm really having a fun time with it. And that's a good tip, by the way. If you find yourself joyous and enjoying it and loving it, that's a good tip. You're heading in the right direction. And so then I'm ready. I'll take a wider audience. Little did I expect it would be on 6 out of 7 continents. But, you know, how wonderful is that? How great is that? This opportunity just opened up. And at first it was monthly, and there was a little part of me that had that little slip up about the weekly and a kind of a yearning to do more. And then, sure, you ask, you can have, of course. So often we forget to ask. And these little things will come to us in packages that we don't necessarily recognize from the wrapping. But if you get a sense about it, it's like, the radio show? Well, yeah, it sounded a little scary at first. I've never done a radio show, but everybody has to do something new, you know. Why not? So I jumped right in.
I think that's a really important point, that it may not look like the thing that you think it is,
yeah,
which may incline you to reject it or not fully embrace it because you had a fixed idea about what it was going to look like.
Yes.
Yeah. Great.
The wrapping may be different
mm-hmm.
than what you expect.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I've got another little exercise that perhaps we should go into now then.
Certainly.
So this is one that I just love, and it's one that we all experienced as children, but we so often forget it as adults. And this one is to just be who you are. And so just take a moment and just quiet yourself and get comfortable, and then just sit in your beingness. You might want to say your name to yourself, either silently or aloud. Now then, just knowing that you are a part of the divine, just like a drop of water is part of the ocean, you carry the whole signature of divinity within you. Now ask yourself what you would truly love to do. Who would you love to be? You are being that already. Know that that is what you came here to do. It's already yours. And see doors opening. And see yourself being who you are. And then just take a couple more relaxed and easy breaths. Move your body a little bit. And return to your normal waking consciousness. And just let that go. Just know that it's done. And now maybe you can show our next slide, Tony.
Certainly.
I love this one. This is a quote from Esther Hicks. And it goes, just like a seed that we are watering in the soil, we expect it to grow. Thus we align ourselves with that manifestation. And that's what we do. You know, we learn this as children. We put a seed in the ground, and it's tempting to want to dig it up every day and look at it. Are you sure it's in? Is it in there still? Is it sprouting? There's a certain amount of trust that has to happen. But more importantly than that, we just have to align ourselves with the knowledge that it is so. And so that's part of what I was doing with my post-traumatic stress disorder as I was imagining being able to walk safely to the car to get a sweatshirt. We have to align ourselves with what is so. And then we're there. So that's how that practice happens. You just let yourself see yourself doing what you'd love to do. And you just own the beingness of that. This is the truth of who you are. And I love the way children will just be. You know, you see a kid just sit down, they're just being, la-di-da. They're just themselves, you know. They're not trying to be anybody else. I mean, they might get up and run into pretend right away, right after that, but they do have these moments periodically throughout the day, all day long, where they just be who they are. And that's a very, very creative way of being. The adults who carry that through into, you know, the people who carry that through into adulthood are among our most creative in our population. It's a great way to be. So you want to ask for what you want. You want to believe that it's possible. You want to feel it. You want to see yourself doing it in your own imagination. You want to accept the truth of it. And then you want to bring it to your consciousness. And then we find ourselves doing it. And, you know, I love the story of Carl Jung's life. He had this really, well, one of the main things that he taught and brought to us is that term active imagination, which he would do. You know, he would go, he had this little house along the riverbank that he would, it's like his study, and he would go down there and spend much time down there meditating and thinking and writing. And one of the things that he would do while he was down there was basically creative imagery meditations. And he would imagine a cloud floating by in the sky, or else he maybe would see a cloud, and he would just imagine that cloud just coming right in the door of his study and coming right into the room with him and just carrying on a conversation with it. Or he would imagine talking with the river, or he would imagine all sorts of things, and he called these active imaginations. And it's sort of like a version of pretend, you know, let's pretend the river can talk. And then just allowing it to go ahead and addressing that as a discussion. And he got all of his information for his, he wrote all of those active imaginations and much of those musings that happened in there, in that little house. That's where he created his Red Book, which was only just recently published, as you know, Tony.
Mm-hmm.
But that was the source of all of the information that was published some years back in his Brown and Black books, which were the books that sort of were how he became the founder of our modern psychology.
Yeah, there were two figures in particular that I remember that feature prominently in the Red Book. One was Philemon and the other was Salome. And he would receive advice from Philemon, just as you were saying, in the process of active imagination. And from, you know, these and other figures, he, you know, gained so many insights into the nature of the individual and the collective psyche. It's truly amazing.
Yeah, really, really wonderful. And a great example of how mental imagery can really create beneficial changes, not only in our own lives, but also in the lives of others, if we follow through like he did. There's a good friend of mine was just telling me today, she came by for tea and told me that when she was young, she was exposed to David Bressler, who is the founder for the Academy for Guided Imagery. And he's also a former associate clinical professor in the UCLA Department of Psychology and a founder of the executive director of the UCLA Pain Control Unit. And he refers to the inner advisor. Because, you know, in a scientific context, we can't be talking about spirit guides and, you know, angels and things. We kind of have to go with something that's a little more neutral. And one of the things that he notes is that imagery is the dominant natural language of the unconscious. And so he has a whole certification training program where he teaches people how to, you know, use this inner advisor and decipher the important meaning of their own inner imagery and then to dialogue with it in a powerful way that optimizes the body's remarkable healing abilities. I think that's so great. It's a wonderful thing that she shared with me today to find out about that center, that Academy for Guided Imagery. And they're on the Internet. You can look them up, and they do trainings and all of that. And really, what's going on when we are using this guided imagery or this connecting with our inner advisor like Carl Jung did with Philemon and Salome is we are engaging our creativity. We're really enlivening our vision center. We're allowing, which, of course, increases our psychic ability. That is the main way that we, you know, as humans, we tend to be so visual. Other animals are more, say, auditory or more kinesthetic, but as humans, we are very, very visual. And so that vision center is exactly what we're using when we are allowing ourselves to do guided imagery meditations. And so that does really uplift our psychic ability, and it also increases positive thought in our lives, and it really helps us to increase our self-esteem. And, you know, sometimes also, too, you know, we can have negative imagery. We can see terrible things and disasters happening, like me trying to walk out to the car. Oh, sprained my ankle. Oh, no. And so sometimes when I get asked about worrying or the creative potential of our negative thoughts, there's that next slide, maybe you can show it, which is a really kind of an interesting way to think about worry, that worry is like a negative prayer. because we're putting it out there to the universe all the time, again and again. So that's another reason why we want to really honor the practice of meditation as a great spiritual guide, because it helps us to watch our thoughts so that we are paying attention to our thoughts, so that we are not just letting them guide our life. We're actually using our heart to guide our life and letting the mind be the servant. And in order to have the mind be the servant, we have to be able to pay attention to what we're thinking. And so here's the dilemma. You know, our thoughts are really powerful. They are less powerful than words or actions or deeds, but the constant repetition of our thoughts gives them considerable weight. And so our negative thoughts feel weighty because they are kind of heavy. And our positive thoughts are a little more floaty and uplifting. And so I like to think those positive thoughts when possible. Now, it's not that we can push those negative thoughts away, because what we resist tends to persist. But what we can do is we can think of other thoughts that we maybe would rather think instead. Or like what I did, where I would just be persistent and patient with myself and loving and accepting of who I was, with my trying to walk out to the car and get the sweatshirt, and instead just wait until I could safely make a passageway into, oh, I can also think that I can make it right out to the car safely and back again. How nice is that? So it's not like I was disavowing those thoughts. I was just coming up with other thoughts to think instead or along with. So one of the nice things about 4 a.m. in the morning is that everybody is asleep for the most part, and there's not a lot of thought traffic in the air. It's one of those times when we can kind of go out and have some clear thoughts, as opposed to, say, a busy street corner where there's a lot of thoughts going on and there's really heavy with thought. And we can almost feel that. It's very tangible. It's sort of like, you can feel positive thoughts. Like if you walk into someone's home and there's been maybe some negative thoughts in there, you can feel it. Or if it's positive, you can feel it. You can kind of get a feeling for it. So that's just one of the things. So for homework, I'd like for all of you, if you get a chance, to really see if you can find some time this week where you can watch your mind. And some of us already do this all the time anyway, so if you are, then keep up the good work. Watch your mind. Catch the negative thoughts. Write them down in a journal and acknowledge them and accept them. And then think of what you'd maybe like to create along with or instead. And then add those more positive thoughts to the list as well and remember them. And then, you know, when those fear-based or negative thoughts come up, just remind yourself of the other positive ideas that you can have. And then this can soothe your fears and calm your mind and your body.
That sounds really, really good.
Yeah, it's a nice little homework assignment. So Peace Pilgrim, one of my very favorite mentors, she spoke about the relinquishments that, you know, she had preparations and purifications, and the relinquishment, one of the relinquishments that she spoke of was of relinquishing all negative thought. And she said, worry is not a concern which would motivate you to do everything possible in a situation. Worry is a useless mulling over of things that we cannot change. She said, seldom do we worry about the present moment. It's usually all right. If you worry, you agonize over the past, which you should have forgotten long ago, or you are apprehensive over the future, which hasn't even come yet. We tend to skim right over this present moment, and this is the only moment that we really can live. So with that, perhaps you can show our next slide, Tony.
Certainly.
And this is a quote from Peace Pilgrim, and she says, we can give our worries over to God's hands. Then they are in the best possible hands, and we can let them go. I just love that.
Yes.
It's like the pink bubble. Just let it sail away. Off they go.
Yeah. I mean, still to this day, it amazes me when things that I've worried about, you know, the next day, the next week, the next year, the next decade, they all seem so trivial in retrospect.
Yes. Isn't that a blessing?
And seem large at the time.
Yeah.
Now, Josephine, we do have a question from Stacy from Ohio. And she writes as follows. Blessed Josephine, I've had this question for a while, and I'm sure a lot of us do. How can we tell, based on our thoughts, feelings, mental imagery, projections, and whether it be in meditation or not, which is our stuff and which is stuff that we are picking up from another or from within the field around us? With your such loving guidance and humble experience, I would be so pleased if you could shed some light on this question. With love, your friend in spirit, Stacy.
thank you, Stacy, so much for this beautiful question. And I think you're right. I think that a lot of us do wonder about this. How can we tell if it's our own mind or if it's impressions that are coming from outside of us? And I think that this gets us back to one of my main premises, and it certainly is a little sign that I have over my altar, which is know thyself. And I understand that this was written over the city gates in stone of the ancient city of Delphi and then was later adopted in the Christian religion as one of the main creeds there as well. And this is a really good thing for us to try to do, to know ourselves. And that little exercise that we did a little while ago about being, just being ourselves, that helps us to recognize who we are. Because when we are being me, when I am being me, there's a really kind of a signature feeling to it. And the know thyself helps us to realize that, you know, there are lots of early subconscious programs that we have received, and that's a natural, normal part of our socialization. So, you know, we've learned how to be in our culture of origin, we've learned how to be in our family, we've learned the different rules, and we pick all of these up mostly, you know, without even really much conscious attention, often before the age of two. So a lot of this information comes in. There was a very, very funny scene in a Woody Allen movie that I just loved where it showed two newly married people in bed. So there's the husband and the wife, and they're in bed, and they're, you know, thinking about maybe having, you know, some loving time together. And next to the husband, the camera widens, and you see next to the husband is first his mother on his side and his dad just on the other side of his mom. And then next to the wife is her mother on her side and then her dad on the other side. For mom. And, you know, it's like we bring our family with us into the bedroom, believe it or not. Of course, this was in the imagination and in the subconscious mind, but I loved the way Woody Allen portrayed that on the camera because it was such a great example of how we carry our socialization with us wherever we go, even sometimes into the most intimate experiences, which our own meditation with ourself is one of those intimate times. We're being intimate with our own self. We're allowing ourselves to see and watch our own thoughts. And so much of that is programmed by our parents, our school, our church, our government. All sorts of things have an influence on us. So learning to know who we are is part of this process, to really get in touch with that signature feeling of who I am. And then also remembering our lives and going back through our lives and thinking, oh, yeah, where did I get this? Where did I get that thought? Because there are some thoughts that really, truly don't serve us anymore. Like, for instance, a good example would be somebody who maybe has been smoking for 20 years and they finally realize, you know, they really don't want to do this anymore and understand it's not healthy for me. Well, where did I get this idea in the first place? Oh, I thought it was cool because my friends when I was 13 thought it was cool. And so that's an example of something that has kind of come into our space and we've sort of adopted and owned it since then, but we can also realize that, you know, that might not be who I really am. It certainly isn't who I am right now. And so we can kind of pay attention that way. Again, that exercise that I spoke of earlier of that little golden halo, like a filter to kind of call our own thoughts back to us and let it screen out what isn't ours is one of those other ones. When I'm doing my work as a medical intuitive, I have a whole protocol that I go through to clear myself, to prepare myself to do my work so that I'm not doing projection. And also I try to keep myself very clear in my diet so that if I'm tasting coffee on my tongue when I'm doing a reading for someone, I know it's not me because I'm not a coffee drinker. And so if that way I can feel and sense and know what is mine and what isn't mine. And I will ground myself. I send, you know, with a root down into the earth. I center myself with a bright white light inside my head, pushing out all the thoughts of others so that there's only room for my own thoughts inside my head. I call in my higher self using that blue light of Regenesis, filling every cell of my body. I acknowledge my angels around me, and I notice their demeanor and what they're feeling and thinking, and I let them be part of my guidance system. And then I ground the earth, and I balance my chakras, and I do many other things as I'm doing that little preparation to get ready to do a reading for somebody else. And I do all of that with intention, and not only do I ground and center my own body, but I also clear my mind and try to, you know, realize that I'm not going to listen to fear, that I am not superior or inferior to anyone, that I'm fearless and they'll move ahead in the present time and that sort of thing. So I have a whole protocol that I have worked out that I really use, and that's another way that we can help ourselves really be true to what we are doing and who we are in the moment and not picking up on other stuff, unless we intentionally want to. Like, for instance, when I'm doing a medical intuitive reading, that is my intention. And I put my hand on the name and address of the person that I'm there to serve in accordance with the highest good for all and according to, you know, in accordance with divine will. And if all of those conditions are met, then I will get the information. Otherwise, I get white noise. It's all right, okay, that's fine. I'm not, this is not where I'm working today, you know. So I let it go. But that's my protocol in a nutshell. And then the other thing that I think is important, one other thing, is to really check and clear our lower first three chakras, the purpose chakra, the creativity chakra, and the power chakra. These really help us to get in touch with our personal self before we move up to the upper chakras of our, you know, vision center and our evolvement and our communication and, of course, our heart. So that our bottom chakras are nice and sturdy on the ground. And then, you know, once we've got our feet firmly on the ground, then it's fine for us to go ahead and allow our heads to be up in the clouds and to move through these more etheric areas. And in that regard, you know, our spirituality, which are these beautiful chakra meditations that have come out of Hinduism and also our prayers and our alignment, those are the guards at the gate. Those are our spirituality is the guard at the gate that keeps us safe as we do these more esoteric explorations of our own beingness, of our human beingness. And so those all help me to keep myself in my own field so that I'm not just picking up stuff willy-nilly from around me. Another one that I love is one that I learned from my mentor and teacher, Jana, and she called it clearing the psychic collar. And with this, you just make a little buzzing sound, and you let your teeth sort of rattle together, your front teeth, and that just sort of clears that little psychic collar. The blue light of the Regenesis, or the blue light like what Ram Dass was speaking about in his story about Krishna, those kinds of activities all can, in our mind, using our imagination, using our guided imagery, and our inner advisor, can help us to really keep our space clear, which is a really nice thing. And then we're not so prone to pick up on other stuff as well. So knowing the self, being the self, remembering our lives and who we are and where we come from, keeping our bottom chakras in good order, and allowing our spirituality to be the guard at the gate, these are all parts of how I do it. And I'd love to offer a webinar sometime on boundaries, because these are all boundary issues. And learning how to know more about our good boundaries from our good, safe, healthy boundaries, that's how we reach the boundlessness. That's how we can really do our distant travel with our psychic ability and with really connecting in, as some of these great teachers out of India have shown us, and out of some of the other religious traditions as well. You know, we can wind up with these siddhis, as they call it in India, SIDIS, or skills that are out of the psychic realm. So there you go. I hope that has answered your question.
Well, thank you, Josephine. What a complete answer. That was tremendous. Thank you. We do actually have a caller on the line.
Oh, lovely.
Shall I invite them on?
Yes, please.
Okay. Welcome.
Good morning, Josephine and Tony. This is Carl from Australia calling.
Oh, hi, Carl. How are you today?
Well, I'm sitting here in the warm sunshine with my dog, and we're having a nice warm spring morning. And I've been really enjoying your show about the ideas of creative visualization. And I thought I would give you a perspective of an ancient mythos, if you like, that sort of centers around some of the ideas that you've been talking about.
Oh, I'd love to hear it.
Okay, great. Well, you know, as you may know, I have the distinct pleasure and honor of gathering together all the ancient Maya inscriptions that talk about the birth of the universe and the creation of our current world. And as I gathered, there's over 55 inscriptions. And as you gathered all those together and you reach a sort of critical mass, you see that there, you begin to understand their basic philosophy of creation. And, you know, while we look at creation in the aspect of possibly, you know, a big bang, for them, they had their basis of creation was a big conversation. And it's
great.
Really interesting. Yeah, because the gods get to create the present universe and the present world and human beings. The gods get together. They literally say that they put their minds together. And they created the current reality, the world, and the humans as well. So, and I believe that the ancient Maya, they realized that everything starts with a conversation. You know, from your shoe to the table to the house you live in. They understood that, you know, two entities get together and they have a conversation. And in this instance, it's a big congress of gods that get together and they have this conversation and they create this charter and this charter of rituals and structure, which is then given to us to maintain. But I always thought that, you know, the universe begins with a giant conversation was far more practical than, you know, some some big bang or some self-made God coming along saying that you know, I'm going to create everything for my pleasure.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
So, yeah, this joining of the minds, and what's even more interesting is that previous to this creation, according to the ancient Maya, is that in order for those gods to come together and have that big congress, is that prior to that, man's consciousness had to be created in the form of the number 20. And the number 20 is named after a human themselves because they have 20 fingers and toes. So this idea that, you know, we would say like in the beginning was the word, but for them, prior to the beginning was the number 20. And this number 20 being the consciousness of humans themselves had to be born into the world and take its first steps across the heaven, creating 20 divisions by which, you know, all the stars and the planets and time would be governed by, because the number 20 is the basis of their counting system, which is named after humans because they have the ability to count 20 fingers and toes.
Yes.
So it's really neat that the seat of all creation is for the ancient Maya, at least according to their inscriptions, the seat of their creation is a conversation between two people.
Oh, that is so great.
Anyways, it all starts with a conversation. So I thought I would just share that with you.
Thank you so much, Carl. That's really wonderful.
All right, thanks for a great show. I'm eagerly listening for the last few minutes of conversation.
Well, thank you, and we will create together.
Okay, thanks, Josephine.
That's wonderful.
And thanks, Tony.
Thank you so much,
Carl,
for calling. Nice to hear from you in Australia there.
Goodbye.
Thanks.
Bye.
All right, bye.
I think I cut him off there. Oh. Well, that was really great, wasn't it?
Oh, that was lovely. Yes, indeed.
Okay, well, we do have another question,
Josephine,
but it's really rather long.
Oh, that's all right.
You think we have time for it?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Okay. Let's just jump right in. Okay, it's really interesting. Now, here you go.
Okay.
Josephine, I have a question about sanctuary and meditating. I feel like I'm at a crossroad where maybe my sanctuary ran into my meditating. My altar is in my bedroom. I also meditate in this room in the early morning before we start our day in our house. 2 weeks ago, I was sleeping, and the room was full of light, which made me start thinking immediately. It didn't feel like the whole night passed, and when I opened my eyes, the light wasn't coming through the window, which was my first conclusion that it was outside sunshine. I turned over and witnessed my whole ceiling in pastel colors.
Oh.
In fact, the ceiling also had a material pattern imprinted on gossamer energy.
Wow.
It was like looking at a gigantic pastel print on a flag, slowly billowing in the wind. And I finally said out loud, okay, I don't let anything that isn't from God's energy around me. I'm in God's energy, and I allow nothing but His energy around me. And I call down my guardian angels to assist me immediately. I call down Archangel Michael and Archangel Gabriel and Archangel Raphael and Archangel, and on I went.
Wow.
And I asked Mother Teresa and the Buddha and Gandhi, and finally I stopped after a repertoire of names and went to myself, wait, I could be asleep. Remember, I've been having this conversation out loud. The next thing I can think of to say is, okay, you can stay, but I have to go to the bathroom. And I got up. As I walked out of my well-lit room, I turned on the ceiling light and didn't look back. 5 minutes later, I was ready to walk back into my bedroom. I had to walk down the hallway about 10 feet, but the light from the ceiling light was on, so I was not put off about walking up to my bedroom door. When I got there, this energy was still on the ceiling, but the color was gone, just the clear energy waving across my ceiling. And I thought, okay, I know I am awake, so I shut off my ceiling light. The room is warm now in color, and when I got back in bed, there on the ceiling was the pastel-patterned material light waving gently on the ceiling. And my next thought after viewing this awesome pastel pattern was, I better make sure the ground rules are clear. And once again, I started aloud. I never have any energy around me that isn't God's energy. I'm surrounded by the love of God. I was still talking out loud. I'm not taking any chances. And I called down Archangel Gabriel and Archangel Michael. I'll end by telling you that you were in my thoughts when I was positioning my angels in the four corners of my bedroom. And my cord went all the way down to the magma of the planet. I wanted to feel grounded at 3 o'clock in the morning. Anyone that knows me knows that I'm a scaredy cat. I went to sleep reciting names of people that had found enlightenment. I can hardly believe I didn't wake my husband talking out loud as I went to sleep. Do you think I've opened a hole in my bedroom with my altar and meditating? Thanks for listening to my story, Rose in Arlington, Virginia.
Wow, that is really quite a great story. Quite a paranormal experience. One of those extrasensory perception situations. And these are so often discredited because they're, you know, they don't fit into our usual normal waking reality. But this is an excellent example of a psychic experience that you had, Rose, and a really clear one. And in answer to your question, yes, I kind of do think you've opened a little hole in your bedroom with your altar and meditating. But it's not a problem. It's not so much in the bedroom as it is in your consciousness. It feels to me like you have opened a space there. And really this is, you know, I love this story because you are so clear about your boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
And you did a beautiful job of really establishing that. There is no mistaking that, you know, you were standing in your power and you're saying, if this is not of the light or of the highest good, go, be gone. And that's
mm-hmm.
a really great thing to do. We have power. We can claim our power. We can own it. And so you did a beautiful job with that. Myself, I try to keep my bedroom mostly just for sleeping. We kind of have a bedroom that has sort of like a room that's a part of the bed. It's like the bed is over on one side. That's where we just sleep. And then there's also some chairs, and that's sort of where we might sit and talk or do something else. But really where the bed is, that's just where we sleep. So if that's at all possible in your room, that's a good idea to have that bed be just for sleeping. But then, you know, there's this allowing in that you have, which is really great. I mean, you have in some way, you know, you've got this great, clear, higher self, you know, highest good boundary, and there is a part of you that has allowed this in. Otherwise, it wouldn't be happening. And you can ask for it to stop. I mean, I have a dear friend whose dad was a good friend of ours, and he had a psychic skill when he was a child that he asked to stop. And that was whenever he would shake somebody's hand, as was the custom when he was young, even as a young boy. This was some, you know, 80 years ago. He would feel a little zip up his arm into his underarm of pain, a little zing, if that person was going to be passing away in the next few days. And he did not like that experience. It happened to him 2 or 3 times, and he finally just said, that's it. I don't want to have that anymore. I want that to go away. And it did go away. So we can ask for these things to stop. If you're uncomfortable with it, you can certainly state your boundary parameters and say, don't even want this. Thank you, no. Like you can say, I only want a visitation by an angel or by a deceased loved one, which is something that I had in my bed when at one point when my uncle had passed away, and I wanted so badly to go to his funeral, and it was in the next morning, and we were racing to try to get out, and I was not getting my proper sleep time, and it was going to be dangerous for us. And he appeared, I think, to help protect us and to save us. And he said, "You kids stay home, you know. I know that you loved me." And then he disappeared. But he arrived in colors similar in a way to this gossamer material that you're describing, Rose. But he was a figure, like the bust of my uncle just floating there right by my pillow. And so these kinds of experiences are within our normal human capacity. They're not that common, but you've clearly done all of the good groundwork, and there is a part of you that has allowed that to come, just like there was a part of me that allowed my uncle to come and save our lives, and I'm very glad he did, because we would have been on the road sleep-deprived, and we probably wouldn't have made it safely to his funeral, and there might have been more than one funeral as a result of that. But you can ask for what you want. So if that's not comfortable for you, you can say, you know, look, I would be more comfortable with, say, an angel or a loved one or one of my, spiritual mentors appearing to me. And, you know, let the message come be very specific and let it come in English or another language if you are fluent in it, you know. So we can ask for these things of clarity. They will really help. And what I have to say about this is, good job, really wonderful. I think you've done a beautiful job. And it's okay that if you meditate in your bedroom, that's fine. Just set your parameters even a little tighter if you want them tighter. Or enjoy the experience. It sounds like that was actually quite a pleasant and quite a beautiful experience. And I'm so glad that you wrote in to share this with us. It's really an intriguing and beautiful story, and I've never heard of anything quite like it before, so it's just wonderful. I really appreciate the sharing.
Well, Josephine, thank you so much for that. I've got some bad news. I know there's lots more you want to say, but we're just about out of time.
Oh, dear.
So let me just say that the link to next week's show can be found on Josephine's website at steppingtomagic.com. Simply click on the top menu for radio. And if you have a question for us or would like to include it in our weekly newsletter, simply go to the contact page on Josephine's website. So, Josephine, do you have any parting words that you'd like to say?
Oh, yes. Thank you so much for that, Tony. I'd just like to say that guided imagery meditation has been very, very important to me in my life, and it's perhaps the main tool that has really helped me to develop my clairvoyance center and my third eye. And using our imagination really frees our psychic senses, and our image center is perhaps the most available to all of us in terms of psychic ability. So I think it's just great, and I hope that you all have enjoyed this little exploration into guided imagery, and I welcome it for you in your lives, and I hope that it helps you as much as it's helped me. And then in closing, I'd just like to thank all of you so very much for giving me the gift of your time, and I always like to finish with this little blessing, which goes like this. As our gifts are given in love, they are received in love, and we honor their wise use and their increase for all concerned. And so it is.
Thank you so much for that, Josephine. As always, it's been a real pleasure talking with you on the radio, and I trust that everyone listening has learned lots of really helpful things about guided imagery meditations. This has been show number M-3.14, and if you've enjoyed the show, we really hope that you will tell your friends. We look forward to having all of you join us again next week when Josephine will be talking about how we can meditate our way to an experience of oneness with all things.
Tony and I wish you all insight, wisdom, and magic as you pursue the journey of inner knowing. And I hold you all in light and in love. Thank you so much for listening. This is Josephine Lang. Until next week, good night.